Welcome to New Realities for another broadcast about the investigation into the investigation of our changing consciousness and how the planet itself is changing with us or leading us through these changes. And tonight I have a guest who's really at the forefront of the science of this planetary transformation, this change in consciousness, this change in the way we're thinking about ourselves and the cosmos. He's David Sarita, and I first heard of him on Coast to Coast, where he was doing an amazing analysis of solar flares. But there's a whole planetary change happening now. If you were on the East Coast, you probably felt an earthquake today, and we're going to be talking about why earthquakes are happening. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Alan, for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be in the East Coast today. We were talking earlier about something that was leading up to some very strange waveforms I was detecting in the middle of the night last night.
Right.
And they suddenly ended, and then we had the first earthquake in Colorado today.
And then we had another one right after our conversation this afternoon in Virginia that was felt up the whole East Coast. And
I know it's really remarkable because, you know, I grew up in California where earthquakes are common. Mm-hmm. And I was in the Northridge quake, you know, in, I think it was 2004-ish when that happened.
Well, what's happening on the planet? I mean, there's earthquakes, there's solar flares, there's a hurricane hitting Puerto Rico. I mean, we're in the midst of a cosmic movement to a new place in the galaxy, and we're being impacted by new, I guess, cosmic rays or something, huh?
Yeah, I mean, scientists know so little about our migration around the Milky Way galaxy. We're going, I don't have the data right in front of me, but several million miles a day we're traveling around the Milky Way galaxy, and we're entering new space every day that no one has ever, no human civilization has ever lived through. So as we move through new energy fields transfer their forces, electromagnetic and otherwise, to planetary bodies and solar bodies, and then you get effects. And some of the effects are quite radical. I mean, you can think of it in a simple way, like Einstein's photoelectric effect. When photons or light particles hit a metal sheet, it causes energy in the form of electrons to flow, like raindrops flowing down a river have a kind of a force, a mechanical force. And so NASA, you know, pretends, oh, we know nothing's going to happen in 2012 because, you know, we've seen the past. But they're not accounting for that several million mile a day journey around the Milky Way galaxies in a 250 million light year orbit around the galaxy. And not to mention our vertical ascension. You know, we actually, a few million years ago, crossed the true galactic and were ascending upwards.
So this whole thing about the Mayan prediction of being in alignment with the center, the black hole at the center of the galaxy, you're saying, and I've heard you say other places, is not a reality. It's a sort of estimate of what was.
Well, you see, when you draw a line on a sheet of paper, you say it's above the line and below the line. But when you blow up, you know, magnify the line, it is volume. So in a way, they're right. We're coming out of the thickness of the line into the upper, you know, dust disk, as it's called, the plane or line. So we're passing through it, and we're poking out the upper part of it now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even though that line took a few million years to cross, the solar system is dipping south of galactic plane and north of the galactic plane in this enormous, enormous orbit. That, again, the dinosaurs went extinct. I need to pull up my ebook here in a minute. The last time we were just above the galactic plane. So that's when they went extinct. We're at the exact same point, roughly, give or take in accuracy, a million years or so, which is not very accurate. The same place where they went extinct. So even the oldest humans, you know, maybe, you know, 15 million years old, you know, some of the most primitive humans, and that's arguable. There's people who say 5 million years, 3 million years. We were just below and inside of the thickness of the plane. So what NASA has discovered is the higher you go north from the plane, the cosmic energy from galactic center is far more powerful in transferring its energy to our solar system than we were south of that galactic plane. So the higher up we get, we will eventually get so high in a few more million years that most scientists believe that a lot of the biology on the planet will not survive. Only very advanced life forms will be alive.
Or maybe it will mutate. I mean, this is what evolution's always been about. I think effects of radiation that have been incorporated into the cells that created speciesization. That's how species became from one thing to another. I also want to say there was a crop circle this year describing exactly what you were saying, a sphere rising through a plane. Did you happen to see that?
It's astounding. I mean, what determines whether a life form can survive higher energy cosmic rays is the membrane of the cell and the volts and microamps per cell in the body of any living organism. Mm-hmm. Cosmic radiation, when it gets intense, if the cell has more crystal and high voltage content to it, it repels radiation amazingly. In fact, this happens like in Hiroshima and Nagasaki when the United States dropped atomic weapons in 1945 on Japan. Mm-hmm. Strangely, there are reports of people who ate a lot of brown rice, which are the poorer Japanese, they didn't get cancer. And the people who are richer who ate the white rice got cancer. Well, it turns out that brown rice is loaded with potassium and magnesium, two super high-energy electrolytes, which increases the millivolts and microamps per cell in the body, and therefore it survives the radiation. Now, it's very similar to, you know, our limited views on, well, you know, nothing else could survive on another planet because they have more cosmic rays than Earth and, you know, nothing would survive there. Well, that's not true, because higher voltage life forms, such as some of the super fantastic light orbs that appeared in crop circles, I have been personally, you know, visited over my 30-year meditation career by super beings of light that have so much cosmic energy, it literally is a total shock to the very weak electrical human nervous system to be in their presence, and you find yourself falling prostrate on the ground, just unable to withstand the tremendous energy emanations of some of these beings. And some of these, when I talk about this, I mean it in the human body is an electrical system. We run positive and negative ions in our nervous system, which are a lot bigger than the electrons that run through copper wire and lights your light bulb and runs your computer. But they're electrical. And if you get a voltmeter, you can measure the voltage on your fingertips. Every human being, in fact, I've tested over 800 human beings in person, and everybody has different voltage. Some people very weak, especially people who are nervous system disorders or clinical depression types. So what you see is why radiation from a nuclear power plant like Fukushima, why one group of people will get cancer in that exposure level and another group won't. I believe is determined by the volts in the microamps in the cell.
Well, so but I do think there's a difference between man-made harmful radiation and cosmic radiation. I think part of what moves the engines of evolution is being in new cosmic rays that mutate the cell in a positive way. That's why we have all the different species we have. I don't think that's something Darwin could explain, actually, how one species becomes another species. And I think it's because of the positive radiation that we are exposed to, or species are exposed to, as we move through different places in the galaxy. That's my theory.
I totally agree with you. I mean, biologically, studies have been done with very weak magnetic fields that cause what you call genotype and phenotype changes in fish. Like, so you beam these fish. This was a study done in Russia with very weak, I mean, many times weaker than Earth's magnetic field, which is not even one gauss at the surface of the Earth. And these fish, their offspring were born with rainbow stripes on their bellies, and they're all swimming in perfect synchronicity with each other, whereas the previous generation couldn't do that. So one of the most positive things coming out of, you know, the science of spirituality in 2012 is, well, we know, let's back up a couple of days. Like a week ago, someone sent me an email alerting me once again that all the seismic stations worldwide in different continents and countries, at the same time, there was, it's like the earth was rung with this vibrational bell at a very weak level, but it was fairly uniform worldwide, which means they're not picking up a distant earthquake like the ones we had today and then getting the distant resonance from these different stations. It's uniform. And the last time that happened, what followed were big earth-changing events. So I became aware. I have several meters in my house, and I pulled out yesterday. I was doing some experiments. I designed a new way of blocking cell phone radiation and computer laptop radiation, and my partner and I were testing how much radiation in the form of microwaves and magnetic fields was going through my material, which was next to nothing. And suddenly, in microwave mode, which is where you broadcast microwaves for phones and laptops, I switched over to magnetic mode to check the magnetic field, and there was this pulse going on, this really amazing pulse where the background radiation was what you call 1.5 microtesla. And you have tesla and gauss as your two standard measurements to measure the strength of a magnet or a magnetic field. Now, the tesla is more sensitive. And it was pulsing up to 3 microteslas, holding 3 seconds, going down to 1.5 for 3 seconds, going back up to 3 for 3 seconds. And I watched it do this all night. I've never seen this in all my years of watching background radiation, a sharp rise.
You don't know what was creating that.
There's no way I can describe, because even thunderstorms around here will cause a very weak change in that setting on my meter. And it can't be satellites and satellite towers, because they would be in the microwave spectrum, and it was zero in the microwave spectrum. Mm. And then there's electric mode, which is static electricity in the air, and that was zero. But magnetic field was doing this intelligent, you know, 3 beats up, 3 beats down, so that's 6 seconds for a total up-down wave, which was a very square type of wave, which is used in timing circuits and wristwatches and electrical timing devices. And I thought, you know, this is powerful. I have a one-acre property. It didn't matter where I went. There's no power lines. It was happening everywhere, all, you know, last early evening. I got my flashlight next to me in bed. I'm showing my wife and saying, you got to see this. I've never seen this. I didn't know, Alan, what was going to happen. But it turns off. It just drops at about 11:40-ish. And then I go to bed, and all of a sudden, within 20 minutes, I hear this woman's voice, a spirit saying, get up, get up. I get up, and I'm checking for spiders because I'm worried about my daughter. Is that what the spirit's saying? And I go outside. I look at the ladies, beautiful. You know, not that. There's no spaceship. And then I turned on my computer, and there was this 5.3 earthquake in Colorado. Mm. And I thought, Colorado? And it was on MSNBC, and everyone was shaking in Los Alamos. And I went, you know, why would a spirit wake me up for this? I mean, but it's unusual. And I kept staying up and went back to bed. And, of course, you know, you and I talked today, and I told you about this strange, mysterious wave. Mm-hmm. And then we get another very significant earthquake that was felt, you know, all the way up into Canada and down to the Carolinas. And I really think there has to be a connection here, because there's no technology that we use for broadcasting radio or cell phone towers that would not show up in the microwave and radio spectrum on my meter. Just a pure magnetic wave.
So what do you think? Was it cosmic radiation? Was it HARP, you know, man-made, or was it something?
Well, yeah, those are good questions. You know, HARP would probably show up in the microwave. I really don't think it's purely magnetic. It would be electromagnetic, and that means it would show up in the radio microwave on the setting on my meter. I really believe the signal was coming from space. If it was only happening in Sedona last night, then I would have to deduct, because the day before there were these strange impressions in the cloud that had perfect cutouts, like someone cut out a line of a big triangular-shaped UFO. And I'm a person who believes that UFOs are in higher dimensions and can leave energy imprints on the clouds. And the day before that, Alan, I didn't tell you this, but I have a new, brand new type of radio transmitter that I've been studying how microorganisms can transmit messages to each other, and this has been tested by major physicists like Alain Aspect, a French physicist, separated the electron and the positron over great distances, and when he stimulates the functions of one, the other responds using an atomic clock faster than a radio signal, faster than the speed of light. And so I figured out the mechanisms in that and built a transmitter, and we sent every year on my birthday, August 21st, I've done this for 2 years, I just turned 50, we sent a message to the Palladians, and we said, would you appear to us? And we said that, and I literally, you know, ran it through my technology harmonic code transmitter, unlike any radio transmitter on the planet. It was invented and built by me, and every time we've done it, we always get an answer.
And how do you get your answers?
Well, here's what happened. Instantly, I go outside, open the sliding glass window, and there's a third moon out there, and it's quite bright in Sedona. And underneath where the moon is where the Pleiades are rising off of the rocks in Sedona. And there they are. And this big flash goes by the Pleiades. I mean, most people would say, oh, that's a shooting star. But it doesn't have a smoke trail. It was bulbous, and it went faster than a shooting star right across the Pleiades. And what are the odds of that? Well, then the next day, we had the strange impressions in the clouds, and then the very next day, the strange signal showing up on my meters. So I don't know. You know, it's very mysterious when you start probing invisibility and detection of, you know, UFOs and paranormal phenomena, spirit beings with the limitations of human technology.
Well, I got another question to ask you, because I just got an email today from my friend Tricia McCann, who's been tracking the Elenin, comet Elenin's alignment, and she says that alignment is about can cause earthquakes. She says it caused the Japanese earthquake, the Chile earthquake 8.8, the Christchurch earthquake in New Zealand. So every time a comet comes into some kind of Earth orbital alignment, there's a gravitational pull that can cause earthquakes. I mean, that's one theory. What do you make of the Elenin phenomena?
Well, I'm following Elenin and Honda and, you know, all of the strange, you know, cometary or asteroid bodies coming into the solar system. But I predicted the Chile earthquake in front of 800 people at the UFO Congress 3 days before it happened because of enormous, and not average solar activity, but enormous eruptions on the sun. Now, the same eruptions occurred 3 days before the Japan quake, the big one. And as soon as I posted the notion of NASA saying the sun erupted and there's pictures of it erupting, within 15 minutes there was a 7.2 in Japan. And it takes 3 days from the plasma wave that leaves the sun to get to Earth, and then you get another wave. Well, 3 days later, after that 7.2 in Japan, we had the 9. But it's possible Elenin, and I'm very mystified by possibly being a one of these brown dwarf stars or super gravitational mass objects is triggering the events in the sun, because nothing in a closed system like an atom and all of its satellite subatomic particles, if you stimulate the function of one, you affect the whole system. So Elenin, if it is something other than a comet and it has some real mass, energy, and gravitational pull, or even some strong magnetic pulsing, that could possibly be contributing to the whole solar system and thereby the sun erupting and the earthquake.
Interesting comment I have is that I don't think the atom, the subatomic particles, are a closed system. They seem to be very much an open system that's interacted with other dimensions. You know, the electron goes in.
I agree with you. When I say a closed system, I mean that's just what it appears to be,
right,
which is an illusion. Because when you transfer energy from one apparently closed system to another, you get effects.
Right.
And you can even have energies come in hyperdimensionally from vortices and points of energy that we can't detect with the basic apparatus science has today. But there are some very advanced detection methods going on out there scientifically and in the scientific and spiritual communities that, for example, the Princeton Global Consciousness Project and the random event generators. And in fact, I interviewed Roger Nelson, the director of that project, for my film, The Voice. So you have technology that you can use to look for, changes. So the changes come at the DNA level, the cellular level, because magnetic fields, we know, change DNA. I agree that probably the better part of 2012, there's going to be a lot of Earth changes, and there already have been, as we're moving into this new energy field in the galaxy, and let alone some part of the alignment theory may or may not be correct. But these, we know from studies in microbiology that magnetic fields affect living systems. And in order for us to survive our journey northward above the galactic plane, in fact, I met a NASA Hubble Space Telescope astronaut, Andrew J. Fustall, hiking in Sedona. And I was telling him all about this stuff, and he said, "Oh yeah, we know all this. We know we're going north. You know, we're 10 parsecs north of the galactic plane right now, and that the higher up we go, the cosmic rays get more and more intense, and they'll eventually get so intense that life as we know it has to change to evolve. And those changes may bring in a new human ability, a new human mind, a new human consciousness."
That is actually the theme of the program. I mean, that's exactly what, I really want to focus on. If you can hypothesize and sort of go out on a limb of what you think as we move into this new heaven and new earth, what human consciousness is evolving into, how does it look in, let's say, 5, 10, 20 years down the road with this change, with this shift in the DNA, with this awakening of more, I think, of our brain's capability and a new electromagnetic field around the human body. How's that all going to affect the way we think and how will our societies function different? I mean, no one knows, but take a stab at it.
Well, you know, for myself, I started meditating every single day by the time I was 18 years old, and I'm 50 today. And, you know, like Kung Fu, you know, you can't get good at anything unless you've done it for at least 7 years. And I did it intensely. I did a lot of Buddhist practice, you know, 10-day Vipassana, sitting 12 hours a day, lots of yoga retreats and meeting with masters from India and all the common gurus people know I've either lived with or studied with. And what started to happen is that you suddenly get these massive fissures and cracks in your egg or your ego or limited, you know, field, and you get into these super luminous, massive cosmic experiences. And in 1994, you know, Christ appeared to me blazing like 10,000 of our suns. I fell flat on my face. I couldn't look. And he began teaching me a new type of science and mind physics, in which was so advanced at the time, it took me years to kind of put it in a literary form and into a form in some of my films. Within days, I was seeing, with my eyes open, not mental pictures, but I was seeing the dead. I was seeing interdimensional beings in the middle of the night. I would get these static waves of electricity in my body and bolt out of bed, and there's somebody there. And in fact, when Princess Diana died, she appeared. I was living in a yurt in Topanga, California, on my dad's ranch. A yurt, like a giant tent on a deck. And she was in my room in the morning, and the light's coming through the fabric windows. And there's Diana, as queer as a bell, sitting there. And I hid under the covers. And I said, this can't be happening. I can't really be seeing her, physically seeing her, sitting there looking devastated and telling me that something was wrong with her death. Lifted the covers up a half an hour later, and I was sweating under there. You know, not getting enough air. There she is. She's still there. I'm like, what is she doing here? I wasn't really ready for this ability at the time because I was seeing so many, not only dead people, other enlightened masters and beings floating around. It was like I was in a science fiction movie living in this yurt for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I was working for Department of Defense and landmine and bomb protection at the time for these super physicists, and you know, going to work every day and wearing a suit and coming back to the yurt. And I was meditating long hours on the weekends. This went on for years and years. And in fact, I even saw my daughter before she was born. She appeared right beside our bed in this kind of shining light. And I think the new children who are being born in the new cosmic energy, these abilities are going to be way easier for them than they were for me. I wasn't born with any abilities. I didn't see anything when I was a kid. I just meditated and meditated and meditated because I wanted to get, you know, higher consciousness and bliss states and experience the ecstasy of, you know, cosmic consciousness. And I did. I had so many incredible experiences, and I continue to evolve my practice. But I don't leave science behind. I'm not one of those yogis who's going to say, okay, I don't need any science. I don't need any technology. Because I really believe that the way the whole human race evolves, and I'll give it a great example, is one simple invention changes everything for everybody.
Right.
You know, when Nikola Tesla, you know, invented radio and demonstrated the Chicago World Fair in 1893, his lab assistant Marconi stole his designs and built another radio transmitter and transmitted across the Atlantic. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled on June 21st, 1943, that Tesla, Lodge, and Stone invented radio. Well, after that, you know, we were using tube radios and tube amps, and the tubes were always heating up and melting down. And this guy named William Shockley comes along in the late 40s, you know, and John Bardeen and William Braddon, and they realize that crystals are loaded with electricity and power. They're teething with life. In fact, there were all these British and American physicists who were trying to figure out how to use quartz and germanium crystal as an amplifier so we could get rid of these big, bulky radio tubes. Right. It took them years. They could see the energy zipping around in the crystals, but they didn't know how to get it to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1947, you know, Will Shockley's partners, John Bardeen and Brad, figured out how to build the first transistor, which is just a wedge of gold foil slamming into the side of a piece of germanium with a conductive material underneath it. And they had to wiggle the wires around a lot, but boom, the crystal amplified the radio signal so much, and they suddenly, you could hear the baseball game, you could hear the news, and you know, halfway across the country, and for the first time, you could make long-distance phone calls in the following years, and all these scientists got on board, and they perfected the transistor.
Wait, I just want to back up there. When you said the crystal amplified the radio signal, it seems like there's a relationship between meditation and a sort of crystallization internally that amplifies a sort of a psychic wave phenomena that humans are tapping into. Is that an analogy that makes sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Because, see, we're liquid crystal. Most of us don't get enough in our diet of proper liquid crystals. I've done a lot of experiments on just doing that and seeing how it improves meditation. Meditation is an effort that becomes less and less effort and more just about being and holding this posture. Well, you can really relax it tremendously deeply. But your liquid crystal, your salts and your minerals in your body, are kind of like the quartz crystal or germanium crystal and the conductive material in a transistor.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Intel chip in your computer has over a million transistors on one integrated circuit chip. A million transistors. You can't even see them. They're so small, and that's why there's so many colors and so many functions on your computer, because of this crystal invention. And then there were crystal oscillators, and there's...
when you fine-tune that crystal, that liquid crystal, you were able to pick up more information in your environment. That's how you're able to see dead people, you know, have these psychic visions, because there was a more coherency within the crystallization or the liquid crystal. At least that's what it seems like to me. I think that's what you're saying.
Well, for example, Muktananda. Have you heard of Muktananda?
Yeah, no, I do know Muktananda.
When, you know, I used to go to Santa Monica after he died and meditate in the room where he was, and you can feel the walls, like, buzzing with his presence, and I never met him. I met a lot of gurus. Mm-hmm. His guru, Nityananda, describes this place called Ganesh Puri in India, where he said you have to bathe in the waters here, and yogis come and meditate, and they drink these spring waters for years, and they get all these powers, all these great cities materializing, you know, objects and, you know, levitating and walking on water. And I said, you know, what's in the water? What are the minerals and the salts in this spring water? Because spring water has a lot of, you know, different types of sodiums and potassiums and minerals. And I realized it's not, okay, the meditation's a huge part of this. It's a massive part of it. But you have to make your body a superconductor. And I realized that, of course, a lot of these areas of India weren't mined like America was mined and stripped of all the gold and the silver and all the conductive metals. When lightning strikes a mountaintop, all those metals ionize and give off gold ions that go in the stream, and you drink the gold ions in the water, and your nervous system gets supercharged on gold ions, and you're powerful. And so half of the ability of the shaman has to do with what's going in conductively in the body. I started doing studies into crystals, similar to the way these early transistor scientists did, but I wanted to test it on the body and how I could affect consciousness. And because I worked in the field of nuclear fusion for 10 years, I knew how to build these micro, small nuclear fusion devices. I built a chamber, and I started attendants with these new super mathematical codes I found that exist in the quantum universe and nature, which is in my ebook, you know, Differentials to Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe, codes that are beyond Fibonacci sequence, and I would program them into crystals. In fact, an early IBM scientist named Marcel Vogel said crystals will be the hard drives of the future because they're basically empty vessels. The diamond on your diamond ring and the ruby is an empty, programmable crystalline hard drive. And so I would take like Indian mantras and run them through my harmonic code generator and collapse them in this magnetic collapsing field into jewelry. And then people wear it and you'd see their millivolts go way up. And I said, wow, every time someone touches one of my pendants, I can see on a voltmeter. You know, not muscle testing with unprofessional.
How do you get the mantra or the vibration into those crystals, into those stones? How do you do that?
Well, it's a trade secret. I invented this technology, and I don't use commercial electronic parts. I had to hand build the parts because transistors today are not built in harmonic ratios. Everything in our society is frequency based. You have this frequency and that frequency, but in nature doesn't really understand frequency as much as it does harmonics and ratios. And so I built the generator. You think of a musical instrument, has all these different ratios on the music scale, you know, perfect fifth, major third, and, you know, all these different Pythagorean scales. I built a wave generator that has the harmonic scales of the 1 to 1.11111, which is an Archimedes infinity, which I found everywhere in nature. I found it in flowers, subatomic particles, electrons, muons, galaxy spirals. In fact, I wasn't finding Fibonacci's code everywhere. And what I did is I found the secret to how nature programs magnetic fields and materials. And I programmed it in there, and it stays in there for years. And so we decided to say, if everybody's volts are going up, and I could measure their microamps going up, and I couldn't find a single human being who had one microamp. And when I wear my charge necklace, I'm at 7 microamps. And there's nobody out there who's got that kind of voltage going on. And I've tested over 1,000 people now. Well, we decided to use Konstantin Korotkov's Super Aura camera, and we got results every time. We went to trade shows, and people took their supercharged toroidal crystal down to the Aura camera, and they got before and after, and they were amazing. So it makes sense, you know, that if a transistor, which is so tiny, in fact, I bought an old Fairchild transistor, which is just plastic coated with the crystal and the conductor, and I pinched my little fingers on it, attached it to the voltmeter, and you had to fiddle around with it, but it amplified my voltage too. But It doesn't have any harmonic information in it.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it that stone, because we're heading towards the Great Pyramids right now as giant super transistors and crystal oscillators and what that means, mm-hmm. how is it that all these ancient civilizations use stone, you know, and mm-hmm. we think, oh, that's all primitive. You know, that's, they were crazy to use all that heavy stone and build buildings out of stone. But why is it that these giant stone monoliths were all built in ratios that had uneven sides? And we thought those were building errors because mm-hmm. we make everything with even sides. We make even-sided triangles, you know, rectangles, squares. But in nature, if you look at a pyrite cube and you measure in millimeters and micrometers, all the sides are different.
So what are you saying? So they use stone as the ultimate or the best conductor of these energies for the planet, in a sense?
Well, it gets way deeper than that. You see, the way a transistor works is it needs crystal and some type of metal conductor in layers to produce the positive-negative-positive or negative-positive-negative charges in the various types of transistors we use.
Mm-hmm.
And granite, you know, the core of the Great Pyramid is this pink granite. And granite
yeah, it's in the King's Chamber. There's these huge granite slabs that are, all, I mean, the whole pyramid, but the King's Chamber itself is you know, like a house of granite, you know? Have you been inside the King's Chamber?
No, but I've studied the math for years, and
it's
I
incredible.
Was the one who discovered something new about the pyramid that nobody else knew.
And what
and
was that?
What it is, Alan, is, you see, we didn't know, in fact, we have no knowledge that the ancient Egyptians knew the circumference of the earth, the distance around it. And assuming it was a perfect round sphere, like a tennis ball, mm-hmm. Archimedes' student, Eratosthenes, decides to take a sextant and measure 1 degree in the sky equals this distance around the earth and multiplies it by 360 degrees and gets the first approximation of the circumference of the earth.
You know, he was only able to do that because he took 2 points, one due north of one south and one directly north of that. If they would have went to the east or the west, the measurements probably would have been off. I was thinking about that experiment.
Because NASA, using radio telemetry, which is bouncing radio waves off of the Earth, radio telemetry, discovered that the Earth is an ellipse. It's not a perfect tennis ball. And the circumference pole to pole in kilometers is different than the circumference equator to equator.
But it's not
the
that
ratio,
much of a difference. Is it only a couple of hundred miles difference?
It's not. It's actually, the exact numbers are in my ebook on the differentials, the harmonic codes of the universe.
Okay.
The Greek historian Heraclitus in the 6th century B.C. said, the word logos is the most mystical of all words in Greek mysticism. He said it's the most unknowable of all words. In the Christian Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were Greek manuscripts. And in John 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Well, the English word, word, comes from the Greek logos. So logos is closer to the truth of what the meaning of John 1 is.
Mm-hmm.
And logos means the perfect harmonic vibration of the universe. So it correctly reads, in the beginning was the perfect harmonic vibration of the universe, and the perfect harmonic vibration was with God, and the perfect harmonic vibration was God. When Jesus spoke the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic, he was never talking to a man in the sky with a robe. He said, O thou from whom the breath of life comes, who fills all realms with sound, light, and vibration, right? That's logos. But in Greek mathematics, logos means ratio, because you need ratio to set up vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So the ratio of the Earth's circumference, pole to pole, divided into the circumference equator-equator, turns out, if you divide in royal cubits the four sides of the pyramid, and cubits convert to 10 base math, which is the decimal system, very nicely, you get the same ratio to 2.8 decimal points accuracy. So that's better than 98% accuracy. The uneven sides on the pyramid have the same ratios as the Earth does built into it, and they're built in the ratio of Orion's belt, the star system that's rising in the east right now. You know, depending on where you live, you know, at midnight you should be able to see it. And under first Sirius rises, the brightest star in the sky, and then you see the Pleiades, and then you see Orion's belt. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a young man named Wayne Herschel who realized that nobody knows the pyramids further down the Nile were built in the same ratio as the Pleiades. In fact, he found in Japan, Tikal, Central America, all over the world, there were pyramids built in the ratio of the Pleiades. Ratio is the true meaning of logos, which is setting up a ratio vibration. When you realize the Great Pyramids had a rose granite core and a limestone layer, you realize that they have these same type of layers that transistors have. You have conductive, semiconductive, which is crystal, conductive layers. But why the heck would they build transistors or crystal oscillators that size in square dimensions instead of round? Because, you know, we broadcast everything now in, like, you know, sine waves, you know, floating up and down waves. And, you know, square waves were used in old timing devices and crystal oscillators for, you know, wristwatches and keeping, you know, computer time and all sorts of timing functions. So remember, the wave I heard pulsing, and I could see it on my meter. I didn't hear it on my meters the other night, last night, were square waves. Well, all the pyramids all over the world were square wave based, and they had ratios built into them of a distant star system and Earth dimensions encoded in it. Is that some kind of faster than light super crystal oscillator transmitter system?
Let me get that. So you're saying the ancient master builders were understanding the perfect harmonic ratio of the universe and aligning us to a cosmic frequency to help spread a higher vibration here for human consciousness? Are you saying that?
No, I'm saying that the pyramids were used as faster than light harmonic ratio built transmitters between the star system that they were built in the ratio of.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
and for what reason, though? What was the purpose for the human benefit of that?
To talk to their distant gods and deities.
Oh.
See, if you go back to the Rig Veda, probably older than by far than any religious material on the planet is the Rig Veda, and in it there is a deity named Kritika, who is a deity from the Pleiades, who is said to have taken human DNA and stored it there. There's so much evidence that, in fact, in the Rig Veda, the only place you can see that the Earth was not a perfect sphere, that there was a differential between the circumference at the pole versus the equator, is in the Rig Veda.
Oh, and I see. So you're saying it's because the Earth isn't a perfect sphere that it creates ratio. I see what you mean.
It creates ratios in the waves that vibrate around it instead of a frequency. You see, a frequency is a single wave oscillating with, you know, when an electron spins around a proton and it has these different angular momentums that are constantly throwing, instead of spinning on a flat plane, it's spinning in all sorts of angular momentums. If a wave is spinning around an egg, the frequencies are changing constantly because the diameter of the wave is changing constantly in that faster, you know, speed of light vibrational pattern.
Oh, I
so
see.
You
it's
see,
a dynamic
the
equilibrium
is more important
that
in nature,
that.
Nature than number, than frequency, because if you look everywhere in nature, nothing is the same. You have different lengths on flower petals. You have different radial lengths on frozen ice crystals and snowflakes. In fact, we took the NASA sound of the sun, which in the Vedas, the sound of Om, the mantra Om, is the sound of the sun in the Vedas. And the ancient yogis heard the sound of the sun or the sound of one hand clapping. Mm. Well, I had that experience in a three-day Buddhist Vipassana many years ago where I heard the sound of the sun and I was laughing and there was ecstasy everywhere. And I finally got the NASA audio file And I had a Russian scientist, Leonid Ezvikov, in Russia, and the producer of the film Water, Saida Medvedeva. They vibrated tap water, took a picture of the frozen crystals of tap water, which was a mess. They vibrated the sound of the sun into it. We froze the crystals. It was stunningly beautiful, the most amazing geometry anybody had ever seen in this whole water movement as far as restructuring water. But I did all this math on the crystal, and the angles of the six, on the crystal were all slightly different. Well, the sloping angles in the Great Pyramid are all slightly different, between 89 and 90 degree slopes. Why did the builders build in differentials instead of even-sided geometries like human architects like to do?
Wait, because so that makes sense. The differentials is what nature's really made out of, as opposed to the Fibonacci series and the phi ratios, which are pretty static progressions. So because of the differentials, we have the diversity of nature and a kind of dynamic energy field, as opposed to something static.
Yeah, so, the phi ratio is not static, but it is an approximation. It comes from Leonardo Fibonacci, or Leonardo Pisa, who studied in Babylonian civilization and brought that math to, the Western world, into Italy. And then Leonardo da Vinci also studied under Leonardo Fibonacci and learned that whole system. See, the ancient Babylonians counted in sixes. So they went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and they stacked up sixes.
Right. That's why we have 60 minutes and 60 seconds.
Six spokes on a water crystal, but then another flower has a 5, right? And another flower has 12 and 13. Mm. So they used six-base math, and then they eventually evolved into the DESA, or 10-base system. The Romans were stuck on single numbers and eventually were influenced by the Italians, and they, the Italian philosophers, Leonardo Pisa, and we developed the decimal or 10-base system. So numbers are distances on a ruler that keep repeating themselves evenly. Nature doesn't do that. But nature has ratios everywhere. And to determine the ratio of one length into the number, it's simple division. You just divide the shorter number into the longer number, and inversely the longer number into the shorter number to generate two sets of differential or ratios.
Wait, David, we have about 5 more minutes. If we can sort of wrap it up and give people like tools to take all this information and apply it to their life and to our planetary evolution, what would you say?
Well, if you're interested in raising your vibrational energy and you want to check out my tendons, I have an ebook I can email you for free that teaches you all about it. Just write Crystal Light Stream at hotmail.com or David Serreda, Sereda, at hotmail.com, or just go to lightstreamtechnologies.com and I can educate you about that. The Differential Hidden Harmonic Codes is an ebook and it's available at voiceentertainment.net, and that's where some of my documentaries are. But, there's a lot of meditators who, and I've been doing a lot of different meditation techniques and studying with different gurus. There were a lot of people who did this for, 3 to 5 years, and they didn't get high enough. They didn't get enough bliss, and they kind of dropped out of the meditation movements. They felt a little bit of peace. It was nice, but it wasn't good enough. And I found that a lot of the translations from the Far Eastern languages into Western languages as techniques, there were a lot of limitations in some of these techniques. And so I devised some meditation techniques that are a little more rigorous and a little more, that will speed you up and get you into these higher states a lot quicker than some of the techniques you may or may not have had any success with. This means no disrespect to gurus, all of whom I just love. People like Mother Mira are some of my favorite people on the planet right now. It just means that as Western people, the Indian and Far Eastern languages, when you convert technique into our language, there are a lot of misinterpretations. And I've been doing these meditations every day for 33 years and sometimes many, many hours. And I found there were certain techniques in the translation that I would spend years just getting better. And with just a little bit of orientation, I had amazing success. And I want to you know, say to people out there, you know, check out my meditations at voiceentertainment.net. And if anybody, you know, really wants to go deeper into this, I mean, we're just going to have to do a few more shows because it's
well, let's do a few more shows over the next few months. Is anything we should look out for in the next, you know, 6 months that's coming? More earthquakes? What do you see with the solar flares?
Elenin has a peculiar alignment around the 26th of September, and then it will be closest to Earth after that Earth-Elenin solar alignment, actually in October. And I had an angel appear to me in 2004 in May, and I saw her with my own eyes open, flying around her bedroom. I know that sounds crazy, but I really see these beings. Mm-hmm. And this little childlike angel gave me that same date.
And September 26th? Is that
May?
September 26th,
27th? What's that?
Is that, what's the exact date the angel gave you?
The date the angel gave me first, I calculated slightly wrong, only a few days wrong. I calculated as November 1st, 2011, so 11-1-2011. But when I went 3.5 years using the numbers of days in a year split in half, I arrived at October 29th. And I announced that on Coast to Coast AM in May 2nd of 2004, and that was before Elenin, all this stuff became visible. I didn't know about Elenin. I didn't know about Kalaman and his October 28th date. I'd never heard of Kalaman, and that the head Mayan elder, Don Alejandro, says the real end of the Mayan calendar is October 28th, 27. So that is coming up. I am mystified at how I got the same date as them, but I had no prior knowledge. So there may be a window opening up as we
approach. Should we prepare ourselves for? What should we, I mean, meditate, tap into our
own? What I did, this is radical. I got solar panels. I got half my house that I rent on solar energy. I've got a 3 month food supplied up and bottled water. I'm prepared for possible big earth changes.
All right. Well, you can't go wrong having a, you know, food stored. I mean, it's always, you know, you can always use it. It doesn't go to waste. So,
but
you know.
NASA and NOAA have stated recently in the press that because the magnetic spots on the sun are so powerful now, and we won't reach solar maximum until 2013, if we get hit by a super flare, which they think could happen because of this current strength of our flares, it could wipe out power grids. And you won't see electricity in some neighborhoods for up to 10 years.
Wow.
Because when you knock out all the power transformers, it takes years to replace all those things.
Wow.
If you have your own solar or wind-based system and put energy-saving light bulbs like I did in my house, all LED lighting, so you don't need as much solar power, then you're going to have your own power and you don't need a transformer.
Well, let's definitely do a show before that happens.
Let's do a show before that.
But, no, I appreciate all your research and all your information. Your websites, again, are?
Lightstreamtechnologies.com. You can get also, I can vibrationally treat your own jewelry if you like your own style. Write to crystallightstream@hotmail.com. And my movies are all at voiceentertainment.net.
Right. And then if people wear those vibrational jewelries, they'll help open up to higher levels in their meditation.
Oh, yeah. We've had amazing experiences wearing these things. It's like wearing your own transistor. So you're amplifying your psychic signal, and people are having amazing experiences with them.
Thank you, David. Thanks for everything. Thanks for sharing this great knowledge, and let me know anything like that comes through, you know, any visitations or any insights, and we'll do a show right away if you feel something important is coming, you know.
Oh yeah, I will definitely inform you.
Thank you. I've been talking to David Sarita, and are you appearing anywhere? Are you lecturing anywhere, David?
I have a little 10-month-old girl, so I've kind of canceled some of my speaking tour, but I may be doing some events here in Sedona if people want to travel here.
Well, maybe I'll travel there, too. I mean, I always love Sedona and the Red Rocks. And,
yeah,
but thanks
so
again.
Beautiful.
And I'll give you a call. I'll give you a call later, and we'll talk about what's happening. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. This is In the Fire by Green Fire.
Like a star, like a star.